everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's Appraisal Buzzcast. I'm Jim Morrison, and with me today is our host, Hal Humphreys. Hey, Hal, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing great. We have a really exciting hot button topic. We're going to be talking short-term rentals. We have Jason Ferris, MIA and SRA, and he's teaching a class at Valuation Expo on August 19th on short-term rentals as well. And we're going to be talking about this topic that I know everyone keeps talking about on social media. Let me bring him in. Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hello there, Jason. How are you today, man?
I'm doing well. And it is a beautiful day here in Louisville, Kentucky.
So you're up there in Louisville. You know, one of my favorite jokes is to ask someone, how do you pronounce the capital of Kentucky, Louisville or Louisville?
It's
and they'll try one or the other, and then you say, no, it's Frankfurt.
Oh, there you go. All right. Cut all that.
Well, hey, Jason, you know, you're an MAI, SRA. You're going to be representing the Appraisal Institute at Val Expo this summer. I'm absolutely tickled that you guys are going to be a part of Val Expo as a platinum sponsor. I'm tickled that you're going to be there. For the folks that don't know who you are, tell us, you know, a little bit about your background, how you got into this world of real estate appraisal.
Sure. Well, I got into appraising back in 2003, in which we all talk about as the good old days. The two-page URAR, and I think we were doing five houses a day. And so that was in Dayton, Ohio. And the appraisal firm that I went to work for obviously had a need for appraisers, and because it was just gangbusters, and just really got there at the right time. And it was a very good firm that was all about research and doing the appraisal correctly. And then after a couple of years, they had a need to start branching into commercial appraisals. So I was able to train under a really great appraiser, Chet Brewer. He was an SRA, and start to learn the ropes in commercial. By 2006, I opened up a third office for that company. The company at the time was Stickelman Schneider and Associates. And I was able to open up a company or a branch in Louisville. And that was the third branch. There was Dayton, Cincinnati, and then Louisville. And then in 2011, I went to work for an MAI here in Louisville, Lynn Bell, and started, just doing commercial appraisals. So it's been a great experience.
You know, I cut my teeth working for my dad, measuring houses, holding the dumb end of the tape. When I went to university here in Nashville way back in the day, I apprenticed with an MAI here in Nashville. I spent the first 23 years of my actual career doing commercial. I really do like commercial work.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think it's useful, and I came back to the world of residential a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. The useful thing to me was the amount of emphasis placed on research and amount of emphasis placed on analysis on the commercial side really translates well into the residential side. I think I am a fan of commercial work. I like it. It is fun for me. It is intellectually stimulating. I also love appraising residential property. But one of the things we're hoping people will consider in coming to Val Expo and seeing such a large presence from the Appraisal Institute is, you know, hey, maybe consider pursuing a certified general. Maybe consider, joining the Institute and pursuing an MAI designation and think about the commercial, because there are a lot of opportunities out there for appraisers. And if you have that that more advanced certification, it doesn't eliminate doing residential. It opens up doors for more things.
Right, right. I never stopped doing residential. I think part of my personality just really likes being able to finish an appraisal in a short amount of time compared to a 3 or 4 week turnaround for a commercial report. And what I think in the commercial world is really lacking is there is an emphasis on the MAI designation. And I think the general thinking is that that captures the higher dollar commercial properties. But there are a lot of smaller properties, you know, maybe $200,000 to $800,000 properties that we really don't need a 120-page narrative report to do. I think that there is a huge gap there in the market for that. And what a great place to start for an experienced residential appraiser that already knows all about zoning and taxes and setbacks and land values and neighborhoods and how they fit in order to get into the commercial world. So, I mean, I've always been an advocate of more form reports for smaller commercial properties. I'm an odd guy. I still use the 71B. I hate to tell people that because I think I actually get a lot of bids. One, because, you know, you can do an 18-unit apartment building on 71B and you can really move through that form and it's all the same stuff. It's the same sales approach and income approach and cap rates. And once you get your template figured out, you can really move through that report. And there is a big need in our market for that, for appraisers to do those, you know, small to mid cap properties.
I love it. And you know, with the certified general certification, mm-hmm. an appraiser can like take advantage of that gap in the market between the big jobs that the MAI guy is going to get mm-hmm. versus the stuff that some people might not even want to go to Humboldt, Tennessee and appraise a little 30,000 square foot office. Right. But there's a demand for that because people are out there buying and trading those properties. I think it's great. Well, let's do this. Jason, I'm going to take a real quick break and hear from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back to continue the conversation.
LIA Administrators and Insurance Services, serving valuation professionals since 1978. We provide E&O insurance with a commitment to superior customer service, outstanding liability education, and unmatched claim defense, benefiting over 10,000 real estate professionals nationwide. Explore our exclusive appraiser liability education by Peter Christensen and cost-effective seminars designed to foster your growth. Our underwriters, with an average of 26 years of experience each, are dedicated to supporting appraisers. Visit liability.com to discover how LIA can safeguard your business.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Appraisal Buzz. I'm Hal Humphreys, your host, and I'm joined today by Jason Ferris. Jason, I feel like I cut you short there before the break. So were you about to say something?
No, I'm envious of your radio voice. That's one thing I will say. There's nothing worse than listening to your own voice. But now you've got that smooth radio voice. So it's great.
Well, I actually cannot stand to listen to my own voice. So I don't listen to the podcast after the fact, but I've had enough experience in my life of being on tape and recorded that I just don't care anymore. well, you know, we're talking about Val Expo coming up and you're teaching a class on behalf of the Institute on short-term rentals. Now, this short-term rental thing has become like, if you want to start a fight on social media, mention short-term rentals, right? People are getting all upset about it. If an appraiser wants to learn from an appraisal institute instructor who is an expert, come to Valuation Expo on August 19th. You can take a 7-hour CE course and learn the proper way to address short-term rentals. And Jason, I'll tell you, Nashville, it's a big thing. There are a lot of people having to deal with addressing short-term rentals. And there's some nuances to that type of valuation. So what topics are you going to touch on? And what would you tell anyone who has some interest in taking the class? What would you say to get them to just tip over the scales and do it?
I think one of the things that I had an idea of from the beginning was writing the class for all appraisers. So it is not a residential class or a commercial class. It is both. So the first half of the day is like any other class. We're going to go through the basics and the theories and the math and the formulas. And then the second half of the day is all case studies. And we take four properties, start to finish. We pick the rental comparables. We then put those in a grid. Then we do the valuation. And we walk through the same process four times in a row. And that's, I wanted someone at the end of the class to say, we just did the same thing four times in a row. I wanted to say, yes, that's correct. I learned better by repetition, and I wanted to design the class that way. I wrote this class back in early 2018 and started teaching it in 2019, and taught that on a seminar level, and really had good success. Learned quite a bit from my students. And I will say one of the tougher classes was teaching the Tennessee chapter, because when it comes to short-term rentals, you know, the Tennessee appraisers are no joke. You pretty much have the number one and number two short-term rental markets in the country with Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg, and Nashville. You know, I'm so envious here in Louisville, because when we go down to Nashville, you know, to listen to live music, then, you know, we always stay in an Airbnb, and then you find out that the whole complex was designed as a short-term rental complex. And, you know, I'm so envious at how forward-thinking Nashville is, but we do have an issue on consistency of valuing those types of properties. So that's what the course was designed to do, was create that standard so that we can all be properly valuing these properties and educate the other market participants as well. So in my class, I regularly have realtors, brokers, short-term rental property owners, people that aren't appraisers. And that's actually great, because the more consistency we can have across the market, the better. Because that way, when someone goes to buy or sell a short-term rental property, they already know the process. They already know what's going to be asked of them by the appraiser. So I'm really excited to teach it in Vegas.
Well, I'm going to be crazy busy in the conference days and pre-conference days, but I will definitely sit in on portions of the class. I'm very much excited about it. Let's do this. I'm going to take a real quick break. We're going to hear from our second sponsor, and I'll be right back.
Did you know that NAN hosts quarterly discussions with our appraisal panel on bias, inclusion, equity, and diversity initiatives that impact the appraisal industry? The topic of bias in the appraisal world will remain at the forefront of legislative, agency, and lender priorities well into the future. At NAN, we believe that intentional bias is only a very small fraction of the underlying issue, and that outdated policies and regulations and unconscious bias are a far greater concern. It's our hope to work closely with the appraiser community as partners in an endeavor to improve processes and procedures and ensure equitable treatment for all valuations. Learn more by visiting nan-amc.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Appraisal Buzz. I'm Hal Humphreys, your host, and I'm joined today by Jason Ferris. Jason, thank you again for being here. You know, I mentioned before the last break in the intro to the topic of short-term rentals, you know, if you want to start a fight on social media, mention short-term rentals. Let me ask you this. Why are there so many different opinions on how to approach appraising short-term rentals?
I think the honest answer, because I feel like we know each other now, is that appraisers, we're not great at changing. You know, we're not great at learning new things. And I think short-term rentals, because I'll spill the secret, you know, it's a going concern analysis. And I think that is such a fearful topic for appraisers. And my hope is that at the end of the class that they say, I can tackle that. I can do that. I know the tools and the methods and the techniques to use to get to the answer, and have some tests so that I can test my answers against the market and see if, you know, that approach that I did makes sense, essentially. So, okay. You know, I think some of it is driven by the the lending community requesting short-term rentals on the 1007. And I know that you've talked about that on your podcast in the past. And I think that's driving some confusion. I think the just introducing a little bit of new math, I think, is a little bit intimidating to a lot of appraisers. And my hope, again, was that through repetition in the class, that someone would say, I can tackle that.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the end of the day, if you can give somebody a skill that they can pop in their quiver and be able to use down the road, that is genius. That's a helpful thing to appraisers out there that want to do this work. And I'm glad you brought up the 1007, because one of the things I was doing in the last segment, just kind of looking at the 1007 form. Look, there is the 1007 form, as with every other form on earth, is not USPAP compliant. None of them are. The form is not compliant. The appraiser is compliant. Right. I think putting short-term rentals on a 1007 is potentially misleading, because it was designed for single-family rent comparables for long-term rentals. But I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, is
we've got a couple of issues, right? I believe last year you all looked at the bottom of that form, and I want to say 1988, right?
Yeah.
And how, I think maybe you actually said that, you know, Airbnb was like 2008. I mean, it's kind of this crazy, you know, trying to fit, you know, that square peg in a round hole. I think that somewhere along the way that residential appraising became solely about lending and what lending wanted and what underwriters wanted, and not about the professional filling out the form and then maybe deviating from the form if they had to. So here's an example. I don't know that if I get an appraisal from, you know, lending, and it's going to go to the secondary market, if my sales comparison approach is 200,000, and then I do the 1007 and I get my rent and I get my GRM comps, and I come up and I say that my income approach was 210,000. I better not put 205 or 210 or 207,000 as my final reconciliation. The underwriter will kick it right back, because if your reconciled value does not match your reconciled value from the sales approach, there's a breakdown. And right. So I think the thought is that sales is the only way to go. Cost better just fit in and make sense. And you know, get the report out the door. And I think to some extent, without getting too lofty, I think we need to maybe take back the power a little bit to say, no, this is a single family market where rentals are very common, not short-term rental, just saying regular rentals are very common. And it's okay to land on a final reconciled value that might be different than even both of the approaches, heaven forbid, yeah. Or the third approach if it's a new construction. So I think that the confusion comes from, you know, thinking that we can only fill out the form one way to satisfy the secondary market ultimately, because let's be honest, they're the main source of residential work. So, you know, if I do a residential appraisal for, you know, litigation, maybe it's divorce, maybe it's estates or trusts, and I put a different value on my final reconciled value than I got in my other two approaches, no one says a word. But somehow the rules are different than in, you know, in lending. So they're driving that. The confusion, I think, is coming from the pull from the clients, the main clients in residential, to put the short-term rental information on the 1007. And, you know, we all have an amount we need to bill out every month. And, you know, is it worth the fight to fight with a lender or a client and then probably not get work from them again?
Right.
And I think the answer ends up being no a lot of the times.
I think that the most important thing I've taken out of what you've had to say about this topic is, I mean, at the end of the day, when we're thinking in terms of being a real estate appraiser, being a professional, I think there are two really key parts to the appraisal process. The first being highest and best use. The second being reconciliation. You can make an articulate argument in a reconciliation to come down to a repeatable, reproducible value conclusion from disparate numbers from the sales comparison cost and income approach. And I think that's really critical thing for our listeners to think about is it's our job to reconcile those indications of value from the various approaches to value. And that is the job. I'm really looking forward to the class. And I also really appreciate you taking the time to be here. We're going to be in Las Vegas. Jim Morrison, before I mess up by saying the wrong dates, tell us the exact dates of Valuation Expo.
We're going to be in Las Vegas at Caesars Palace, August 19th through 20th. Jason's class will be on August 19th, so make sure that you are there for that. Come in on Sunday night so that you're there on Monday for that class.
Yeah. Be there. We would love to have you there. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I would say maybe come in on Saturday, and then you're guaranteed to be there for class at 8:30 Monday morning. I'm excited. I have not been to a Val Expo before, so I'm excited to go. I'm really looking forward to teaching the class. I think it's going to be a lot of energy. I think that it's we will probably have some yelling. We'll probably have some laptops thrown. And that'll be a great day because that means that people are passionate about appraising, and that's very cool to see people that have maybe they've not been excited about appraising in a while. This is a new topic, and they can really sink their teeth into it. I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. I'm very excited about it. Val Expo is always a good time. I think this year is going to be an especially good time. We've changed some things up. We've got some different formatting issues going on that I think will make for a really entertaining show. But the classes, the education, having the Institute be a part of this is really exciting for us. Jason, thank you for taking the time to do this. And thank you for being a part of Val Expo 2024. Jim Morrison. Do we have an anonymous appraiser question that Jason and I could try to muddle together an answer for?
Yeah, before we let Jason off the hook, we do have an anonymous appraiser question. If anyone wants to submit their own to our experts, reach out to us at comments@appraisalbuzz.com. It says, I'm doing an appraisal for a house which lacks a basement. However, all the nearby comps in the area have finished basements, making it challenging to gauge the true value. What complicates matters further is that my client's home has about 30% more above grade square footage compared to those comps. However, the comps finished lowering basements include more square footage than my subject property. So sorry, that's a little bit convoluted, but basically they do not have a basement in the one that they're using. The others do, but they have more above ground square footage than all the others.
Okay, so I think this is a really good opportunity for an appraiser to skip specific adjustments altogether and do a ranking analysis. That might be one way to approach it. Don't worry about the specific adjustments. Rank the houses in gross square footage above grade and below grade. My thought is, number one, and Jason, I think Louisville has a similar thing to Nashville. A lot of the homes that have basements here in Nashville are older homes. And when people hear the word basement, they picture that little door in the kitchen that has these steps that have varying rise and runs on each step. And it goes down to a concrete floor with a concrete block wall up about 4 feet high and then dirt from there to the foundation wall. And it's just kind of it's a place to go die. It's a place to go be murdered by some clown underneath the house. Right. Sometimes below grade finished area has a similar, if not identical value point as above grade finished areas. So I wouldn't get hung up too much on it's a basement, I must adjust or I must make a difference. Think about it in terms of what is the value, you know, for above grade and below grade, and is there a significant difference there? That's how I would approach it. Jason, thoughts?
Okay. So what I teach my appraisers is go out in distance or go back in time, and you will find a comparable. There's how many million houses here in Louisville? You will find a comparable. I would rather adjust for location or make a market conditions adjustment, i.e. what we all say is time adjustments, and approach it that way. My other thing that I usually tell my appraisers is, if in doubt, do the cost approach, because you can, even if you have to use the extraction method or allocation method to get your land value, let's say it's a mature neighborhood and there's no sales for land, you know, do the cost approach, dig into Marshall. They should be in Marshall anyway, just to check their GLA and basement and garage adjustments. But my advice is always, you know, if in doubt, do the cost approach. I think that it will be able to tell you if your adjustments are correct. That doesn't necessarily give you the number that you can extract from your comparables, but at least it's a check. I think the difference between average appraisers and good appraisers is a test of reasonableness. You know, taking the extra 10 minutes to say, does this make sense? And let's be honest, if I was in court and I had to explain this, and just like Denzel said, explain it to me like I'm a 2-year-old, then how could I do this? I could say, okay, all my houses were smaller and they all sold for $200 to $210 a square foot. My subject is, you know, 20% larger, and you would assume that the reconciled value would probably be a little bit lower per square foot due to that diminishing return. Does that make sense? Can we prove that in the market? And to be honest, with being able to export MLS data to Excel in about 30 seconds, you should be able to do that pretty quickly. So, you know, we don't send out appraisals without square footage being bracketed ever. And we don't send out appraisals without a comp with a basement, if our subject has a basement, ever. So I think you're just, you know, we're all in this business to not see that report again, right? Because we're losing money every time we touch that report after we've delivered it. So what can I do to avoid that thing coming back? And so you want to head off those questions as best you can, you know, because, you know, please provide an additional comparable blah, 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 you know, and then we all say, well, if I had one, I would have put it on the report. But so what can I do? I went back in time. I went out in distance. I had to, you know, jump 5 miles away to find a similar aged neighborhood and grab from there. So,
And to be honest with you, I think that advice is some of the best advice I've heard in a long time. And that is, expand the time parameters, expand the distance parameters, find something that is actually physically similar to your subject, and then adjust for the varying characteristics. If it's further away, adjust for that. If it's further back in time, make a time adjustment, and have support for those things. But yes, absolutely. And I'm kind of embarrassed. I didn't think of that right off the bat, but literally we are not constrained to 3 months time frame for sales or 2 months time frame for sales or 1 mile. Like those are not actual constraints. We can go further back in time and we can go wider in our scope for distance. So Jason, great advice. Thank you again for your time. Jim Morrison, do we have anything else we need to cover today?
No, Jason, we really appreciate it. And yeah, we hope to see everybody at Valuation Expo to watch your class.
All right. Really appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. And if we have nothing else, for Jim Morrison and Jason Ferris, I'm Hal Humphreys, and that is your Appraisal Buzzcast.